just eat the meal without weighing and measuring it. That's really where my aha came from, where I'm like, okay, I can decide. I don't need to check in with my diet app to determine if I need more food today. I don't need to check in. I just can check in with my body.
If you're ready to ditch diets and embrace a healthier relationship with food, and if you're ready to end the food obsession and the fear of eating, or even the fear of going hungry, this episode is for you. Many of us struggle with food-related anxieties, including the fear of hunger and even the fear of knowing what to eat and when to eat it. The fear of feeling hungry can stem from various sources, such as past experiences, the way that we were raised, for example, or even can come from societal pressures and prolonged history of dieting, and even from having a negative body image, as well as personal insecurities. Welcome back, athletes. I'm your host, Sherry Chaban, and with each episode, I am honored to be your coach and guide in the journey to fall in love with fitness and ultimately yourself. My intention in each episode is to help you release the old story of who you are and step into the one you are always meant to be. Through these conversations, together we will step away from focusing on all the doing and step into the being so that health and fitness is not just what you do, but who you are. In this episode of the show, Lisa Salisbury and I explore the transformative journey of embracing our natural bodies, shedding the constraints of chronic dieting, and fostering a sustainable, healthy lifestyle. Lisa is a certified health coach through the Institute of Integrative Nutrition. And as a former chronic dieter, Lisa knows what it's like to be all consumed with everything that goes into your mouth. It was only when she learned the tools and skills through coaching that she was able to drop the dieting obsession and then finally drop the weight. During our conversation, Lisa shares her touching personal narrative of grappling with body image perceptions and her years of long battles with fad diets. And she also culminates in a revelation of self-trust and intuitive eating, how we can step into learning more about our body and how to connect with the cues that it gives us when it asks for food and when it tells us we're hungry. Some of the things that we also talk about are what it really means to be anti-diet and what it also means to be an intuitive eater. Now, what you're going to be walking away with today, athletes, is number one, the importance of creating a sustainable and enjoyable eating pattern. Number two, the value of food and the need to consider long-term sustainability. Number three, the importance of removing fear and dropping the fear of hunger. Number four, the importance of focusing on meals rather than on snacks. Number five, how to determine when you've eaten enough. And finally, number six, the benefits of fasting. Now, before we jump in and meet Lisa, I have some super exciting news to share with you. This week on the podcast, we are launching a second episode on Thursday. And more specifically, this episode is going to be a mini-sode where we're going to be discussing the importance of the nervous system, specifically how to shift the nervous system so that your body works with you instead of against you. So if you have been going through self-sabotaging behavior and you're noticing perhaps that you have unwanted eating behaviors or other behaviors that are standing in the way of your goals, then you're going to want to tune in into the podcast on Thursdays to catch this minisode. I am so excited about it. And if you're wanting to learn more and even catch these episodes live, then I'm going to invite you to join our very special Make Peace with Food Facebook group. Now, this is a free Facebook group. And to join the group, all you have to do is go to myfoodfreedomlifestyle.com and then click on the link to get your special invite to join the group. I cannot wait to invite you in there. I cannot wait to have you in there so that we can have a conversation around how to overcome unwanted eating behaviors and other self-sabotaging behaviors. And then remember, as always, if you rate and review this podcast on iTunes, give me a 5 stars, take the screenshot, and then send it on over to sherry@sherrychaban.com. I'm going to grant you a $500 voucher to join me in Transformation in Paradise Metamorphosis Greece this October, October 12th to 19th in Lefkada, Greece. I cannot wait to see you there, athletes. All right, now without further ado, let's meet Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me.
It's so nice to have a fellow curly-haired person on the show. I don't get a lot of super curly people. And you have like tight curls also, like that's
The kind where you're like, my hair's 6 inches longer than that. My hair's actually longer than yours, straight hair person,
right. Yeah, I
but
know.
no.
I know for people who can't see right now, I don't know if you like, do you see where my hand is? Like it just keeps going. Yeah, my hair is shoulder length. And we've been having really weird, nasty weather. I mean, it's not gonna say nasty, like it is what it is because we can't control it, but we've been having really weird weather where it's not really favoring curly hair in general. So, it's amazing how the elements really have a lot to do with how this looks, but it's all.
Yeah. And if you decide to wash or not, you're like, it's raining. Oh, don't bother then.
So good. So I'm so happy to have this conversation with you. And you're such a gorgeous being. I had a beautiful conversation with you earlier this week when we connected. And I love the work that you're doing. And it's so powerful. And especially that we're going to get into a conversation talking about how to help women really transform their health. And a lot of that is also being okay with a goal to release weight, because that's an important goal, especially when the why behind it is very important. And in my opinion, when our why behind that is just aesthetic or it's just the way that we want to look, but there isn't anything deeper, that's where I feel that we start to suffer mentally and we start to really judge ourselves for what we're not doing perfectly. And so before we get started, Lisa, again, welcoming you to the show, I would love for you to share a little bit of your story and why it's so important for you to do the work that you're doing.
Yeah, great. I'd love to. So I started dieting in high school, which I feel like is very young. I know there's other people that are like, oh, went to Weight Watchers at 10 years old and I didn't have that experience, but I was definitely told that my body was too big when I was as young as like fifth grade. So I have pretty clear memories of that. And but in high school and then through college, pretty clear that I was too big. I had a swim coach tell me that I needed to drop body fat, and here are some vitamins to do that. I had a teacher in high school who told me I could lose weight. And it's crazy because I look at these photos and I'm like, what?
I know.
Like, it's very strange. I don't know how that happened, really. I don't know why that happened, other than I was standing next to a girl who was, probably less than 100 pounds. So, I mean, of course, compared to her, me at a natural normal weight for my frame. So, early on, I was really conscious of my weight. I think some of my primary programmers were part of this, where, my parents love them, not to throw them under the bus. I had great parents, but my mom was always dieting and always critical of her own body. And when I brought home like a 3-day cleanse diet in high school, my parents are like, well, that's great. We'll do it with you. And so that really just sent the message like, yes, you definitely need to do this, so much so that we're going to do it with you. And I'm sure they just thought they were being supportive of something I wanted to do. But I look at that underlying message now and I'm like, fascinating. I wonder how that really affected me at that point. But, moving forward, I started having babies and basically 9 years of pregnancy and nursing, and my weight was obviously up and down, as it should be with pregnancy, right? As it should be. But I just was in such a bad place mentally with my body and my body image and what I thought was the right weight for me, that it got to the point where, with my last baby, and I knew she was going to be my last, like, I have four kids and I'm like, this is it, like, for sure. Right, I'm going to call it after this. And so I just remember having this thought, this is the last time I can be fat. And like, that is like, I feel like I just want to wrap my arms around that girl, around my younger self, and just be like, no, that's not what this is. This is pregnancy. Let's gain a healthy amount of weight, which is whatever your body puts on, right? This isn't like, what happened then was I gave myself permission at that point to quote unquote eat whatever I wanted, Which meant that as soon as the baby came out, then I was back to restriction. Now you can't eat whatever you want now. And so I just had this very like crazy relationship with dieting. I was on all the fad diets, the shakes and pills, the, if it's got a book and a food list, man, I wanted to do it. And 2005, Glory Day, MyFitnessPal came out and I was like, oh, well, perfect. I can just input what I eat. And then at the end of the day, My fitness pal says, if every day were like today, you'll reach your goal weight in, 8 short weeks. And I'm like, hooray. And the little confetti would go for completing the day. And I was like, I can do it. And I could never do it. I could never do it because the calorie counting did not help me know what to do when I didn't feel like it. It didn't help me to know what to do when I didn't want to follow the food plan. When my brain was like, this is too hard. I just want to go face first into the batch of cookies I made for the kids. What do I do? It's this part that when I started health coaching, I would ask every single one of my clients, because this is what I struggled with. I said, do you need to know more about what to eat or what to do when you don't feel like eating the thing you planned? And all of them were like, it's the what do I do? What do I do when I don't feel like it? Why am I eating when I'm not hungry? No diet teaches you that. And that is really the missing piece of all of the diets that I did in my dieting days. And that's what I coach on now.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Wow, thank you so much for sharing the story. And this is a story that I think a lot of us can relate with, especially when this has actually stemmed from such a young stage in our life. And I just want to actually go back to that time in your life, Lisa. And how was that growing up? This constant feeling like I need to do something about my body, and especially seeing your parents. And again, as we talk about our parents, it's not to say that it was good or bad. I truly believe that all parents do their best in whatever means that they can. We're all learning. I'm a mom of two, and I see what I did 5, 6, 8 years ago with my kids. I'm like, oh my God, I wouldn't have engaged in that behavior. I'm also growing. I'm also learning. And there's things that I am so acknowledging that I would do differently next time. And so coming back to that place, share with us what that feeling was growing up in that way, where there was this constant thinking that there was a flaw of some sort that you had to fix.
I think the flaw, but also just the importance of. And what I mean by that is the body weight of a person was often a descriptor. So, for example, my dad would tell a story and be like, oh, I met a heavyset woman in the store today, blah, blah, blah. Like when I think back, I think, why was that part of the descriptor of the woman? Why wasn't it a brown-haired woman or a lovely woman or a young or like why was his descriptor often her weight? And I think about how it was just of importance. And the other fascinating thing I've learned in as I've like coached and worked on some of this primary programmer is I realized that exercise was, when I think about filling in the sentence, exercise was always for men. Because my mom did not exercise in any meaningful long-term way, but my dad did. He was very active. He had a rowing machine in the 80s. He would do, calisthenics on his own, just like watching the news. He often did home exercise. He had a bike. He started doing long road bikes, some mountain biking. He was a very, very active person. And of course, the only sports that were watched on TV were male sports, which fair in the 80s. Like there just wasn't a lot, unless it was the Olympics, right? Which was memorable too. But I just think that is fascinating to me that I didn't know that women could just, go to the gym also. And so there, it's just interesting when you look back on some of those times and look at like what was modeled and how has that, how, what do I want to keep from that? And what do I want to say? Oh, that's not true. And I totally agree. Like we're not throwing our parents under the bus. And a kind of a running joke I have with my kids is like, I know you don't want to do this. You can get therapy for it later.
We're just trying our best. Super interesting what you just shared. And I just want to insert here that oftentimes we don't actually look at this experience as being traumatic. And so, as we talk about traumas and different types of traumas, and especially the types that may trigger the nervous system, and the nervous system, by the way, when we're talking about fight or flight, is that part of the nervous system that's always seeking survival and protection. And I refer to it as protection mode in my programs. But when we go back to that place and we're actually thinking about that first moment, Lisa, where you were made aware that you had to change something about your body, we don't realize that that's actually traumatic. And so we always talk about food scarcity being a form of trauma, like actually growing up not having food available, going to bed hungry because there is no food. And also we talk about imposed food scarcity also being traumatic. And imposed food scarcity is, of course, the dieting, the restricting, the actual starvation of myself, actually denying myself certain foods. And that also becomes very traumatic. And so, did you experience that? Did you start to notice a change in your behavior, especially as you mentioned how your relationship with food was impacted? Did you notice a direct correlation between being told that we should change our physical body and also how we started then behaving around food?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure. I would say that as far as like that initial experience, I could tell you what that one was. In fifth grade, we were playing outside. We lived on a significant amount of land, and my dad noticed that I was breathing heavy, and he told me, run around the lawn, three times. He gave whatever laps, and I just ran, whatever. I'm like a little kid. And then he like took my heart rate and he decided that I wasn't like that. Basically, he decided I needed to exercise more something, and he bought me a jump rope, and I was supposed to jump rope in the family room for a certain number of minutes every single day. I think I only did it like twice. But that was like weird to me at the time. I was like, no one else is having to do this. Like it felt pretty normal to run and then breathe heavy. Like that felt normal to me. Like that's what all the kids did. I don't know as far as the restriction, if that rolled over into my food, because there weren't restrictions placed on my food at that same time. But there were comments about my body being too large and that may be why I was breathing heavy. But there was lots and lots of treats available all the time, homemade treats, homemade breads, homemade cookies, homemade pies, lots all the time. And so that was freely available and not restricted except for mom when she was dieting.
That must have been a little bit confusing, though, I would imagine. So there's this emphasis on, okay, I need to maybe get fitter, sounds like that was sort of applied, and I also need to change my physical body, and also there's all these treats available. And so again, was that like, and I think anyone listening can likely relate, especially, I think sometimes, Lisa, about clients I've had that I was working with maybe 10 years ago, and I always found this very interesting, and this was always my response. And so I'd have parents calling me asking me to help their kids with nutrition. And now they're asking me to help their kids with nutrition who are 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. And I always found that very peculiar because how can I speak to them about nutrition when really they're growing up modeling you, right? And so if we're going to address nutrition when it comes to kids, we have to address nutrition for the whole family because that way the whole family's doing it and it's not singling one person out or making one person feel flawed while everybody else can have and enjoy these things. And so that was always my answer. Well, if I'm going to work with your child, I'm not going to talk about nutrition with them. I'll talk about nutrition with you because they don't have a job, they don't drive a car, they don't go do the groceries, and they don't cook the food, and they don't stock the pantry. So the discussion really has to be with who is bringing the food house and who's actually making all those big decisions.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me in the growing up years, like it just wasn't really connected. And I don't know that I really, especially at that young age, really connected like too many cookies equals, a different body. Mostly I was just told like, you just haven't lost your baby fat, you're just bigger boned than your sister, those sorts of things.
So what was that exposure to the first diet? Was it that cleanse or yeah, so that was your first diet. And then what did that get into later?
I mean, all the names, Herbalife, that was a big one. Lots of, Lots of praise for how I looked after that one. I did the South Beach diet. I did a lot of the Beachbody ones with the little containers. I did I also tried things like just exercise until you die, and that way you can eat whatever you want. I tried that for a long time, just which does not work because you can't outrun a bad diet. And calories in, calories out. I tried counting macros. I tried crazy. I think one of the funniest ones I did, if you've ever heard of the fast metabolism diet, it's funny because there's food lists for each phase, but the phases, I'm like laughing at myself. The phases were like 2 days long. So you're like phase one on 1 and 2 days of the week, and then phase two, three and four, and phase three on the remaining days of the week. And it just, I look back and I'm like, why was I not allowed broccoli on Sunday and Monday? Like, there were certain vegetables for these different phases. And I just look back and I'm like, what a crazy thing I followed that I thought, well, this is it. This is how I'll lose weight. And, it was, as all diets are, it was just a limiting of intake and trying to, trick you into thinking that you're not hungry and not. I came out of it with not paying attention or trusting my body at all. All I learned from all of those diets is I'm not to be trusted. Only trust your diet app, only trust the food list. If you eat on these lists, you'll lose weight. What you want, your hunger level, not to be trusted. And not only your hunger, but your fullness cues. I remember when I was counting macros, I would be eating lunch meat in front of the refrigerator trying to meet my protein macros, and I'm not hungry. Like, why am I just the diet was the most important thing. Don't worry about if you're hungry or not, get the protein in. Like that, what?
And it's so interesting because we can only have this awakening once we stop dieting, we stop restricting, when we really look back, we've done thinking exactly what you said, that this was the magic diet. And then all of a sudden, this was the magic diet that promised all the glory and amazing things that would come. And then this was the magic diet. And it starts to get so confusing because all the diets have scientific proof and backing up everything that they're saying. And oftentimes, every single diet being very conflicting. And to your point, why can't I have broccoli on Sunday and Monday? This is just, right? It's just pulling back. We're like, why though? And it's interesting because, the cabbage diet, which, I remember hearing about this.
I did that.
I remember my mom did that also.
Cabbage soup.
Yeah, the cabbage soup, and man, the house stank. Like it smelled like party for like, but it was the cabbage soup diet. And I think actually that diets don't really teach us how to eat, but the one thing that they do teach us is that this will all be temporary, that there's
Totally.
time to stop, right? There's an expiration date to this, and let's work really hard, let's restrict, let's push as hard as we can, because on the other side of that, there's going to be success, and then we don't have to work anymore.
Yeah, totally. 6 weeks slim down. One of my favorites, the whole 30. Don't worry, on day 31, you can have a cupcake. Like, what?
And then the 75 hard, and I keep throwing
Oh.
that in. I think if you hear several of my episodes, that's the one that I keep bringing in, because it's marketed as like hardcore, and you're so badass. You're doing two workouts a day, and you're gonna be restricted for just 75 days, and and people acknowledging that they're not gonna drink for 75 days, and they're like, but why? But why? Why do that to yourself for a short amount of time? 75 days is a short amount of time. Only knowing that once the 75 days are done, you're going to come back to do whatever it was that you were doing before, right?
Yeah.
So.
I just think it's so important to lose weight in such a way that you are eating the way your quote unquote natural weight self eats. I'm always moving my client toward how do you want to eat in 5 years and in 10 years when you are maintaining this natural weight? What does that look like? That's what we're wanting to move your current eating pattern to. And I wish we had another word in the English language for diet, because when we say we're on a diet, we're talking about all these things. But in fact, we all have a diet. It just means the things that you eat in a day. And so we are looking to create a diet that you like, that's maintainable, and that serves you in such a way that you feel better. I have clients that are like, I just feel better. They're They're 75 pounds from their goal weight. And she's like, I just can't believe how much better I feel just because of the foods that she's choosing and the way she's choosing to fuel her body, that she's not overeating anymore. She's like, I have tons of weight still to lose, and I already feel amazing. And that's what you're looking for, because most diets, you're miserable until you get to this magic weight loss. But we want to feel good all the way down, because that's how we're going to maintain it. Because that's where the diets fail, is in the maintenance. If we can't live this way all the time, then why bother doing it?
And the message, like what I'm hearing you say, really, the message is suffer. Okay, the journey is all suffering. It's painful. It's uncomfortable. It sucks, in fact. You're really not going to like it at all. The way that you're eating, the way that you're exercising now, it's going to suck. You're going to hate it. But you're going to be so happy when you achieve your goal. And then we won't talk about maintenance, because maintenance is obviously going to involve some of the stuff that you really couldn't stand, right? Which was probably eating foods that were disgusting. Maybe foods like that came in a little container. Maybe certain types of vegetables that you couldn't stand. And what we are forgetting is that the journey has to be just as enjoyable, because it's not about a destination. And in my opinion, when it comes to health and fitness, there actually is no destination. And I know
I agree.
that's a very, very, very big concept to wrap our mind around if we've always had a weight loss goal or if we've always had a fitness goal. Because if your goal is really just the journey, that means you are going to choose the foods that you enjoy. You are going to eat in the way that is sustainable to you. And we're forgetting that food is not just about calories in and calories out, which is what they've always been telling us, right? It's not just calories, but food is connection with other people. Food is pleasure and enjoyment. And food is the way that we really are able to enjoy life. It's another pleasure of life. And so that's how valuable food is for us. We use food when we celebrate. We use food when we're mourning people who've lost, we've lost and who've passed away. And so it's just so important to remember. I love what you're saying, that whatever we do now, whatever we incorporate now, we have to ask ourselves, is this sustainable 6 weeks from now, 5 months from now, 5 years from now, forever? Is it sustainable that I remove carbs for the rest of my life? Is it sustainable?
Please no.
Don't do
Don't do it.
it. Right? So I want to come back to something really important that you said, Lisa. And you were talking a little bit about hunger and how the one thing that we don't actually learn from diets, especially when we're tracking our things and we're supposed to eat this much or not eat that much, and we're not really tuning into when our body's calling for food or when our body's having enough food. I do think that this is one of the things that a lot of us lose touch with, especially when we've been dieting for so long. So can we talk a little bit about hunger and maybe how we can help somebody who's listening today, who's not in tune with their hunger, start to pick up the cues that they can actually take actionable steps towards?
Yeah, I think hunger is so fascinating, because how many times have you seen a magazine cover, one of those Women's World or whatever they are, and it's like, lose 20 pounds and never be hungry. And I'm like, but why? Why could we not be hungry? Hunger has been absolutely vilified as if it's something to avoid at all costs. And I just think this is so fascinating, because you don't ever see a magazine cover that's like, learn to go to the bathroom but never feel the urge to pee. Like, what? Hunger is a natural body cue. Just like we get a natural body cue, like we drink some water, and after a while, our bladder fills up, and then it sends a little signal, and it's like, hey, you should find a bathroom. And you're like, good idea. Like, that's how insignificant hunger should be. We don't need to be mad about hunger. We don't need to be hangry. We don't need to be like desperate. You're an adult, and you are super capable of finding food if you become hungry. So the first thing we need to do is just remove the fear. I have a lot of clients that eat because they're worried they might get hungry. Like, nothing's gone wrong if your body sends you a hunger signal. Nothing's gone wrong. That is totally normal. So first thing we got to do is just drop all the fear about it. It's very, very normal. Secondly, we got to let ourselves get hungry. That's the first step. Because again, the diets that are like, eat every 2 hours, you don't want to get hungry because then you might binge. It's another reason why I think we're afraid of getting hungry. If I let myself get hungry, I might eat too much. Gotta trust ourselves. Like, you're not gonna do that if you start to really get in tune with your hunger and start to really believe in yourself and trust. So The nicest time to eat is when you're pleasantly hungry. Go to a dinner and you're like, oh, I had this big afternoon snack. I'm not really hungry. You don't really feel like eating. Likewise, if you don't eat all day because you're like, I want to have room for this dinner party, and you're super hungry, you're like cramping up, you're lightheaded, that's also not really a great time to start eating because food doesn't feel great in a cramped up stomach,
Right.
right? It takes a while for your stomach to like kind of release. So if you think of this nice middle ground of pleasantly hungry, and I do use a hunger scale, which goes from negative 10 through 0 to positive 10. So negative 10 is like extremely hungry, starving. This isn't just, I didn't have very much breakfast and now I'm hungry for lunch. This is like fasted all day for a medical test. You know, we're talking very hungry. Positive 10 is super full. Thanksgiving dinner, three pieces of pie. I got to lay down in a dark room and unbutton our pants. Equally uncomfortable on both ends. Zero is neither hungry nor full. So I like for my clients to start eating around a negative three. So we have signals of hunger, but they're not crazy, right? We are hungry, but we're not cramping. We're not lightheaded. We're not like desperate. Okay. So this is the nicest time to eat. Then we're going to eat until we're a positive three full, which is just at what I call enough. And this is what I call eating between the threes, or I have a very technical name for this. It's called meal. The reason I make a joke about that is because you're an adult, not a toddler. We don't actually need snacks. We need to wait for physical hunger, sit down, put your butt in a chair, get a fork, napkin, hopefully a placemat, put your phone away, eat a meal, pay attention, enjoy the food, have the company, whatever it is, if you're alone, if you're with friends or your family. But focus on the meal, focus on the food, because that's the only way you're going to be able to tell when you're at a comfortable enough. If you're watching TV, if you're, you know, just scrolling Instagram, if you're eating in the car on the go, it's very difficult to stop at your enough signal. Here's how you can tell if you're at enough. Number one, I think the very best way to tell is if you could get up from the table and take your dog on a 10-minute walk around the neighborhood, that's enough.
I
If
like
your
that.
body's like, ooh, I'm feeling a little nauseous from this much movement from a 10-minute walk, you're past your physical enough.
Right.
We're looking for enough food to last us 3 or 4 hours till our next meal. It's well before full. So I used to say, when you're hungry, stop when you're full. When we're full, that's more five, six on my hunger scale. This is like we're feeling food in the stomach or kind of pressure. That's usually going to be a little too much. We might be able to maintain weight at full. We're not going to lose weight if we get to full. Okay. So it's not about eating as little as possible. It's about eating a skosh less, just a little less, just to enough, right? I don't want you to be uncomfortable. I don't want you to be hungry an hour after you ate. We should be able to go 3 to 4 hours in between meals. And so I think that's a really good measure. And so if you can get up and walk and kind of get an idea, it's good for your digestion anyway. It's good for blood sugar. It's good for insulin sensitivity, a 10-minute walk after a meal. But that just can help you say, like, okay, yeah, that was a good amount. If you come back from that walk and you're hungry, then you weren't quite at a positive three. Maybe you were just at a positive one. And the problem there is when we're snacking, we're just jumping around like, I'm positive one, I'm negative one, I'm positive one, negative one. And we're just eating all day and we're not really letting our body feel that physical hunger signal and the enough. It's way more satisfying.
Okay, I like a lot of what you said, especially this ability to go for a walk for 10 minutes and come back, and that's a great way to determine whether or not we're satisfied and we've had enough food. I like to look at hunger, let's say rather fullness, so that I ate to the point of fullness, as really feeling uncomfortable. Like it's after those big meals, Thanksgiving meals, where you're like, oh my God, those last few pieces of sushi were not necessary, right? And now you're feeling uncomfortable. And so I like to stop when I'm about 80%, because personally, I just feel lighter. I feel like my body's lighter. Otherwise, when I get to that 100%, the times where I need to go lie down. I don't actually feel comfortable. I feel super bloated. I need water, and there's no space for that water. And it just becomes very uncomfortable for the next few hours. And And the other thing that I wanted to mention, especially if somebody is overcoming binge eating, let's say, and I know what you had mentioned was, or the advice may be every 2 hours or 3 hours to avoid binging, but those who are binge eaters, just on a psychological level, because the trigger is from the nervous system and the trigger comes from hunger or comes from the scarcity of food. I feel that until we get to that place where we are controlling the binges, I find that actually very helpful for a person who is binge eating or who is eating a lot in the evening. Maybe they have a habit of evening snacking or late night snacking from the TV. It is useful for them to first overcome the unwanted eating behavior before they can start making these comfortable changes around their nutrition. And maybe that could start with first organizing meals so that they look more complete and they're a little bit more balanced in terms of what would create satiety, and eating every few hours. So that way we avoid a big binge or we avoid the evening snacking.
Sure. I will say I don't work with binge eaters, generally speaking. I generally work with kind of like what I consider chronic dieters. So, yeah, if you find that is helpful for binge eaters, I probably would be the one to ask on that just 'cause that's definitely not like my area of expertise, but that sounds good for them.
Yeah, and I love what you're saying because you're bringing up something so important, especially about the hunger cues. And hunger is a natural and comfortable feeling that the body has. And it's just like pain when we injure ourselves or we burn ourselves and we feel physical pain. That's a signal, that's a message for us to do something about it. And imagine what life would be like if we never got injured, if we never even experienced pain, or if we never experienced hunger, right? So we have to understand that the pain and the pleasure, or the discomfort, and then the resolution to that is very much an important part of our development and just even being able to regulate certain things that are happening in the body. And personally love fasting. I do this a few times a year where I fast for 72 hours. That's so far been my longest fast. And I do that because I actually want to get my body uncomfortable and I want it to get hungry. And what it allows me to do is actually to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. And so, whereas normally, like you're saying, Lisa, we eat every couple hours, we're snacking, and we're always hungry, have a Snickers, like we're always being bombarded by these messages that we should do something immediately or not ever feel hungry. But fasting allows me to first get comfortable with the hunger and then start to really shift my awareness onto something else. It actually becomes a very spiritual process. And then the moment that I down with my food when I'm ready to break my fast, I am so incredibly grateful. I am so incredibly grateful for the taste of food. In fact, it almost livens my pleasure centers in my mouth. I can actually feel food and taste food in a very different way, and with so much gratitude and appreciation for it. And as I'm fasting, by the way, I want to make this super clear, because if we're fasting for the intention to release weight, that's a very different reason than fasting to, let's say, become more connected to the body or become maybe more connected to those around us, those that live on the planet who actually do go hungry for a few days. And so for me, it's a very spiritual practice. And that's what allows me to sit in that discomfort, knowing that I am electively doing this. I've got food in my fridge. I can go buy food, but I for 72 hours have decided to not eat. And I actually feel so connected with all the people on the planet who don't have food right now. And how amazing must it feel, that moment where they have that first meal, that first gift of eating. And I want to experience that with them. I want to share in that experience. And so just something I wanted to share, and I love what you
Yeah.
said. To your point, this is something we fear, and this is something that we're always a little bit uncomfortable to do, and something every diet tells us as well not to do, because we may lose muscle mass if we go hungry.
Yeah, not true. And the other reason for those long-term fasts too that you could tap into is longevity. There's been, several studies with regards to that. So there's lots of reasons other than releasing weight.
So good. So I love that. And I think this is maybe something that we can definitely start to work on, especially just pick up those signals. And it's very intuitive, right? So if we think about, and especially if we've been dieting for so long and we're confused about whether or not we'll be able to pick up hunger and satiety signals, if we think about how we've developed or when we were born, if we are moms, we'll notice that our kids only wanted food when they were hungry, and then the moment that they were full, they stopped eating, right? They didn't want to overstuff themselves. In fact, when they overstuffed themselves, then they would end up vomiting, right? It was too much food. food. And so I want to talk a little bit about those intuitive signals and also get into intuitive eating, because this is something that you kind of mentioned earlier, that aha moment that you had where suddenly there was this massive realization that, you know what, no more, I don't want to be that person anymore. So what is your take then on that intuitive process, or what we are terming today intuitive eating?
Yeah, I think that one thing about in depending on your own intuition is recognizing that it doesn't mean eat whatever you want all the time and the quantities that you, and I'm putting this like in air quotes, like all that you want. Intuitive eating is not the same as an all you can eat buffet. Because I think it's really important to key into the fact that more of this food does not actually increase the pleasure of it. So on those times where you're like, you know, out to dinner, maybe you're on a date or with family, it's your birthday, you know, all of these things, and so you have this desire to finish up, eat it all. It's so delicious. Keep going. This won't keep well. All of those thoughts that your brain offers you know, this won't be good left over. That's like such a common one. So let's just finish it up. And you're having this pleasant evening. And then you're like, yeah, I should definitely do that. And you go ahead and eat past what your intuition is telling you. I've had enough, but you carry on because you're listening to your lower brain, which is like, this won't keep well. Don't waste it. Now we've actually decreased the overall experience of the evening because you feel gross in your body, because you leave that restaurant thinking, I'm so full. I have to unbutton my pants, and now you're uncomfortable in your body. And so, if you look at the entire experience of the food, it wasn't actually as good as you thought it would be by finishing it. And so, I think that needs to become part of your intuition, is how will my body feel? And is this going to actually increase the enjoyment of the overall experience? And chances are it's not, because not only are you going to feel gross in your body, but then your lower brain mean girl is going to kick in and be like, you always do this. You're never going to lose weight, you know, and then you start beating yourself up. So now you feel gross in your body, you're bloated and crampy, and then you start punching yourself in the face with your thoughts. Like, how has this increased the overall enjoyment of the experience? It hasn't. And so I think this is where we have to really like key into our intuition on our enough. Is this enough? How can I stop here and remember that this will be the right amount for enjoying the whole night? And then a lot of my clients too are like, you know, we go on these nice date nights, and then I don't want to finish up date night at home because I feel so gross and full. So we want to think about, you know, what do I want to do in a couple hours? How am I going to sleep or not sleep? You know, I mean, eating too much is going to prevent sexy time. Like, let's not do that if that's your goal for the night, right? Like, so there's lots of reasons to not overeat that also don't have anything to do with intentional weight loss. How much food you eat really affects your sleep. And so it's all of those kinds of things that we want to bring into our, you know, intuitive eating and think about as we are eating. What do I want to do in 2 hours? How am I going to sleep? How am I going to feel in the morning? I think we think about these things with, you know, maybe your drinking plan. How much do I, you know, do I have time for a hangover tomorrow? But do you have time for a food hangover? Do you want to be bloated in the morning? And by the way, bloating occurs most often with overeating. We want to attribute it to certain foods, but generally, it's just too much food. It's just too much volume. That's all. Bloating clears up real fast with my clients that stop overeating.
This is so good. This is so good. And overeating, all those thoughts that you said that generally drive us to overeat, like, oh, when it gets cold, it's not going to be good, or tomorrow it's not going to be so good, or, you know, I may as well just finish it. There's like, you know, four or five bites left, and all these thoughts, that's all scarcity mindset, right?
Totally.
Those thoughts. And super interesting also, because here we are, two professionals, health professionals, helping women transform their health and bodies, and we're anti-diet, and we're talking about intuitive eating. And what's super interesting is just this clarification, these two words, it is so important for me, because a lot of people misunderstand anti-diet as I can do whatever I want, right? No foods are off limits, and I can eat all the volumes that I want, even when they make me feel uncomfortable, right? And then the other thing too about intuitive eating is, again, the exact same concept. And I shared this with you before, Lisa. I see this constantly on social media, and it's getting more and more and more aggressive every day. All of these health professionals that are claiming to be intuitive eaters, pushing people to overeat, and not just to overeat, but to choose foods that don't serve them. Because our entire conversation today has all been about how you're feeling, how you're feeling, how you're feeling, how you're feeling, how you're feeling. And so if I eat certain foods, and for example, that are empty calories or empty of nutrients that don't serve me, so food-like substances, and I don't feel well, that should be my guide to eat less of those foods and to eat more of the foods that do make me feel well. And so that's really the key. And being anti-diet does not mean that I also don't have a desire to improve my health and to improve longevity factors. This is so incredibly important. We all want to live a long life that is full of vitality and full of pleasure, where we are not dependent or relying on other people to do the little tasks for us, like bring us to the bathroom or go up the stairs. And so there are many reasons why it is important to focus on our health. We don't want to become a burden for family members. We don't want to become a burden to our partner. We don't want to miss out on all these beautiful pleasures of life and these beautiful experiences of life. And so there's nothing wrong with saying, I also want to work on my health. And I want to be so intuitive with how my body's reacting to things. And the way that I'm doing that is not by following a book or following an app, but really by listening to the cues my body is giving me. To your point, if I'm bloated, if my sleep isn't restful, if I'm noticing my mood is constantly changing, if I'm noticing I'm foggy brained in the morning, then let's address nutrition in a way where it is going to optimize your health. And it would be impossible not to release unwanted weight when you are operating from that place.
Yeah, for sure. You know, more than just thinking about what do I need to give up, think about what you want to add in.
Oh,
and that's going to crowd out those things. If you're like, you know what, I really could use a few more fruit servings in a day. Chances are, if you add fruit to your lunch, you're really in tune with your hunger scale, you're going to be crowding out the chips.
Right.
You're going to be crowding out things, or you're just going to be, you know, a little less of those things. And so, you know, just take a look at your food journal. I hope you're keeping a food journal. That's my little plug. You know, I always, when my clients bring me their food journals, I'm like, okay, what are you noticing? You know, they want me to look at it and say, eat this and not that. And I always say, what are you noticing from this week? What are you noticing from the trends? And they'll say things like that. I thought I was eating more vegetables than I am. I thought I was getting enough protein. I thought, you know, when I look at it in black and white, and then we add those things in, and it's just going to naturally crowd out the things that you don't want.
So good. So good. I love this conversation so much, Lisa. And I think before we sign off, I do want to hear about that aha moment and then what happened next, because I feel like as we got into all of our other discussions, you had this aha moment after you had your last baby where suddenly you were like, no more dieting. I'm just curious how, again, you got onto this path of really helping women stop dieting, stop restricting, but focus on more sustainable habits to help them transform their lives.
Okay, so it did come a lot longer after that, actually. I did start working with a coach that was trained similarly to the way I currently am with the Life Coach School. And she had me basically eat lunch without tracking it, without counting the macros. And I sat down, I distinctly remember where I was sitting in my kitchen, and, you know, because I was eating without weighing and measuring it. I really was on the path without an official diagnosis. I definitely was on the slippery slope to orthorexia, which is just the obsession with eating healthy. I would, you know, call restaurants for their menus, for their nutritional information, because I needed more than just the calories. I had to have the macro counts. I had to figure it out, because it just would cause a lot of anxiety if I wasn't counting macros properly, according to, you know, my app, plus or minus 5 grams every single day. And so when I was able to delete that app, delete that out of my life and just eat the meal without weighing and measuring it, that's really where my aha came from, where I'm like, okay, I can decide. I don't need to check in with my diet app to determine if I need more food today. I don't need to check in. I just can check in with my body. And so Working with her really helped me realize that I actually am not going to go off the rails. Like, my brain was like, if you don't log it, you'll just start eating the whole, like, you're going to eat whatever you want. But you don't when you actually care about your body. And when you are making your body the priority, you take that intuition and you say, what's going to make my body feel the best? And that's where intuitive eating really shines, is that when you are making how your body feels the priority instead of how, if you're meeting your fat macro plus or minus 5 grams, like it's that's really, where the magic is. And so, yeah, I guess that lunch really was the turning point for me, because I had gotten to the point where I was bringing my food scale to the dinner table in front of my children, weighing my portion. And, I was like, whoa, this is not good. This is not good.
Wow, that's so powerful and so incredibly inspiring. And I could just imagine that there must have been a moment of liberation, but then also maybe some fear and uncertainty to actually
For
just.
sure. Yeah, there definitely was. But also, like you said, it did feel so liberating that it was worth the fear.
Oh, so beautiful. I love this. Lisa, you are gorgeous, and I love this conversation so much. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I feel like I could talk to you for like another couple hours and we could just.
We have so much in common.
It's so crazy. So, if somebody wanted to reach out to you to learn more, where could they go to do that?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, well underscore with underscore Lisa. If you're a podcast listener, though, you can catch me on my podcast. It's called Eat Well, Think Well, Live Well. I'll have an episode with Sherry coming up as well. So I'm sure you guys can hop back and forth between those two episodes, but you'll find a lot of what I talk about. We've discussed here a lot of my tools I give away for free on the podcast. So I fully expect that my listeners are losing their first 5 pounds just by the tools that I give them for free there. And if you are interested in working with me, you can always schedule a free coaching session and see if we're a perfect fit for one another.
Amazing, Lisa. Thank you so much. I love this conversation. You're amazing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.